Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. It is 6:14 p.m. on a. I can't tell you what the weather is outside, but welcome to the Makeshift Managers NBA update. As you know, it's me, Devin.
And it's me, Austin, and we definitely have enough players tonight to get our podcast done.
Oh, Adam Silver's just sitting there in the corner, like, "Hey, dude, why you gotta come after me like that?" It's the funniest thing, especially in the sports world over the last year or so. Like, I remember the NFL, and the NFL season went on without a hitch, minus Doug Peterson benching Jalen Hurts. But I don't want to talk about that on the NBA show. But everyone was like talking to the NFL. They're saying, "Well, blah, blah, blah." Like, the NBA bubble was the absolute perfect vessel for sports in a pandemic, in my opinion. It went off without a hitch. And then the NFL decided to not use a bubble, and they got their entire season, no games canceled, all that fun stuff. And they got some backlash for not having a bubble because it led to some unseemly situations with, like, games getting moved or postponed and stuff like that. And I saw through Twitter a lot of, like, NBA circle type people, like, complaining about that. Like, "Well, the NBA did this so much better." But we're back in the real world. The bubble was great for the playoffs, and the bubble was great to set up the playoffs because you only have about 16 teams to accommodate for. Whenever you have third.
Like the thing is like the NBA had to start that process. They were the first team, the first association to be like, all right, we got to play in a bubble. And then hockey was, literally right next to them. It was the NBA and the NHL's job to set the standard for the bubbles. And then baseball did the best they could. And the NFL, you can't, they. You couldn't do it. The
The
season hadn't
rosters are
started
just
yet.
too big.
Yeah, you were gonna have problems.
Yeah.
And even now, like the NBA has some problems here and there, and like it's gonna happen. Like they're, I don't knock Adam Silver for how he's doing it. I mean, there's only so much you can do.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not going to sit here and knock the NBA at all. It's not anyone's fault directly. I just found it funny that throughout the NFL season, you'd see, like, NBA Twitter going after NFL Twitter about, like, "Oh, you guys had to, like, move this game." And it's like, well, in the process of 24 hours, the NBA's had two games postponed because they can't field enough players, which, kind of happens in the middle of a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah, seriously. I mean,
But I digress. The shortened season has begun. We have basketball on our TVs for the first time in what was over a month. God, it's got to be the
oh
best
man.
time in the world to be a basketball fan. Because the NFL regular season ended, now fantasy football is over, and I have to wait 9 months to draft a team, which is probably for the benefit of my livelihood and, like, my
Oh, yeah.
personal relationships.
100%.
But
Stress
with the
levels
NBA
are
over the
way
last
down.
way down, but over the last 365 days, I've gone about 50 total between basketball happening, and it's weird, but I'm happy I have it. It's the best thing to have excess of is entertainment. And so, just opening the show off, the season has started, and to this point, we're going to start looking at the Western Conference rankings, and we'll examine that a bit, and then bouncing off of that, we're going to look at the Eastern Conference and just kind of take a look at what's been going on in the NBA through the first 10 to 12 games of the season.
So, do you
So,
think
looking
we
out
should
west,
start from the bottom or from the top?
either or works. Because everything's basically chalk from, like, predictions we had on the NBA preview show for the most part. The only surprises in the West, in my opinion, are the Thunder at the 8 spot right now and the Nuggets being down at 10. But it is early in the season.
Yeah, I definitely think the Nuggets losing five games so far is not what I expected. Houston, Memphis, and Minnesota being at the bottom is pretty standard. Even though James Harden is still a Rocket, the Rockets are just not playing well at all. I mean, and it's not surprising. I'm sure James Harden is playing to an extent, but I mean, he's definitely not all there. There's no way that he is.
Oh, dude, the thing about James Harden is he might be the best person at his job in America right now. Like, if you told me, because he doesn't want to be in Houston. He just doesn't. And everyone's been at a job where they don't want to be there to a certain degree. And whenever you don't want to be at a certain job, you're not going to give 110% effort. Am I wrong?
No, you're completely right. Unnamed company. Unnamed company. You know who you are.
Yeah, freaking. So James Harden, just he's literally walking in, punching his car, dropping 40 and 15 and going home. There's no passion in it for him. He's like, I'm out here to get mine. Trade me so I can get mine somewhere else and possibly get a ring. But hot damn, James Harden. The record's not showing it, but he is going absolutely off. And it was a fun first week of the season. Not for me, but for one of my buddies. My buddy Trenton, he's a huge Kings fan. And the Kings came out of the start of the season like they were shot like a can, like a, what the fuck's the word for that? Like a cannon. They were shot out of a cannon. That's what I'm looking for. I was like, what the hell do you call the ball that gets shot out of a cannon? A cannonball. Good job, Devin. Gold star. Regardless, the Kings came out hot, to say the least. They drafted Tyrese Halliburton at, I believe, 12 in the draft, and he came out looking like a seasoned veteran. He's arguably number one in Rookie of the Year at this point. He has been on an absolute tear. He's hitting big shots. He's playing crunch time minutes. It's just ridiculous the output they're getting out of him. But the rookie class as a whole has been performing extremely well as well. In the West, we've got guys like with the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards. He made a really boneheaded play last night in the Wolves loss to – who are they playing? Let's see. Drawing back from my memory.
The Spurs.
The Spurs. So, yeah, Spurs, Timberwolves. Ricky Rubio pushes the ball up. Anthony Edwards gets it, realizes they're down by three as he's driving to the hoop, tries to swing it back out for a three. It's a turnover. The Wolves lose the game. But Anthony Edwards so far has been looking like a certified bucket. Like, if he was on a Rotten Tomatoes, that dude is certified fresh. He can score. Like, I wasn't going to sit here and say he wasn't going to be a good scorer in the NBA because defense can be few and far between for a lot of these teams. And if you can score in college, especially in the ways he was scoring, more often than not, it should translate to the NBA.
Yeah, and what's his face? LiAngelo? Lonzo?
Oh, LaMelo.
LaMelo.
Yeah.
There's too many of them.
The little ball, yeah.
LaMelo dropped a triple-double the other day, so now he's the youngest man in NBA history to drop a triple-double, so why not?
Yeah, like, I know I'm not old by any stretch of the imagination, but it's the weirdest fucking thing looking at NBA, like, players that are younger than I am. Like, I remember I had, like, the weirdest feeling whenever Lonzo Ball was drafted number two overall. I'm like, I'm the same age as this man.
Oh, it, and I'm going to it fucking kills me inside.
In 2 hours.
Kills me inside when I'm watching, like, it's like the whole NFL thing where I showed you the other day. It's like, the AFC quarterbacks that are remaining are like 26 and younger. It's like, shit, I'm older than Baker Mayfield. It's like everyone getting drafted now. It's like, yeah, it's this 19-year-old kid out of Akron and or however,
yeah,
and he's dropping buckets on the daily. And I'm like, yeah, so I gotta go to work here in like 10 minutes. So I'll go make my $5.
I have to go pull a double because somebody called out. Alonzo Ball's double teaming somebody on the ball. Like, because my buddy, one of my other buddies from high school, he ended up going to UCLA and he saw Alonzo around campus a couple times. And I'm just like, this is just the weirdest shit. Like, this dude's getting drafted today. I have an econ final. Like, what the fuck?
Right?
Like, it's insane. But yeah, like, the rookies have been showing out really well. James Wiseman has looked really good. But before we get into our NBA surprises of the year, we should swap over to the Eastern Conference and check out the standings. And if you didn't know, the Lakers are number one in the West, but the West is really condensed and it's super close a lot of the time. Well, we're in the early season, so a lot of it's going to be super close. But the 10 seed's 2.5 games out of the 1 seed, so nobody's out of anything at this point. From the Timberwolves, I would think, damn, we might be out of something because it's not looking good, especially defensively.
It is, but nice. It's nice to see Phoenix up there at number two after 8-0-ing the bubble last year, showing that so far it wasn't a fluke and they're playing really well. Devontae Booker is playing out of
Devin
his mind.
Booker?
Devin Booker. Sorry, wrong sport.
Devin Booker is a stud, and Chris Paul's leadership is definitely translating to that Phoenix team. I know they welcomed a new head coach over the offseason, and DeAndre Ayton hasn't gotten suspended for any funny business this year. So if they stay healthy, they're going to be interesting, to say the least. Yeah. But going out east, we've got a two-way tie for the one seed. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics are tied at number one in the conference.
I see you, Doc Rivers. 7-3. I see you, Doc Rivers.
Yeah, Doc Rivers. Daryl Morey, shout you out. Don't be tweeting, but you built a good team. And then, surprisingly, at number four, we have the Orlando Magic at 6-4. This is without Jonathan Isaac. Markelle Fultz is done for the year with an ACL tear, so they're rocking out with Aaron Gordon, Vucevic, Cole Anthony, to name a few. Mo Bamba's out there. But being... Well, the East is actually full of surprises. I should have looked at this a lot deeper than I initially did, because, Jesus Christ, the New York Knicks are the sixth seed in the East.
5-5. Without Porzingis this entire time.
If the season ended today, the Cavaliers, the Magic, and the Knicks would be in the playoffs.
And the Hornets.
Julius Randle. I saw this thing, because the Knicks, they're a really weird franchise. I am not a fan of the Knicks. They've been in kind of basketball, what's the term? Purgatory. Yeah, basketball purgatory since the days of Carmelo Anthony and Porzingis. But Julius fucking Randle has been going off this season. He's averaging like 20, 12, and like 6 or something like that. Randle is having a year. And as somebody that watched him on the Lakers, I never thought that he really had this in him. But boy, is it fun to watch. Because New York is a huge market. Their fans are diehard. And giving them something to cheer for is actually kind of interesting. Granted, do I think the Knicks are going to make the playoffs? Probably not. There's some teams down here. Like, you look at the Nets at number 10. Kyrie, he's missed a couple games. KD had to sit out a full week. Dinwiddie tore his, he had a partial tear of his ACL. So I think the Nets will kick out at least one of the Cavs, Magic or Knicks. Doesn't matter which one. One of them's getting dropped out automatically. But beyond that, the Pacers are sitting at 3. I don't think that's a huge surprise. The Pacers aren't.
I'll tell you one thing. The Bucks started out really slow. They destroyed the Warriors on Christmas Day, but then they lost to the Knicks, blew out the Heat, and then lost to the Heat again. The Bucks are sitting at 6-4, but I feel like that's not... I don't know if that's where they want to be. I feel like they lost to the Jazz. They're on a two-game win streak after they beat the Magic and the Cavs. They got to play the Pistons, so they should be able to win that game. But then they got to play the Mavs, the Bucks, the Lakers. So they got a tough 3 games ahead. It's like, I don't know. The Bucks are really weird right now.
I think with basketball this season, I can lock in Celtics, Sixers, Pacers, Bucks, and Heat for the playoffs. Because the good teams are going to win games they need to win. But with bad teams, you can chalk up the games that they're playing against these perennial playoff teams, usually as a loss. Based upon averages and like how statistics work out, I trust a perennial playoff team to win out in games they should win. But with like the Knicks, the Magic, the Cavs, Hornets, Hawks, Bulls, Pistons, and Wizards, those kind of teams are just going to kick the shit out of each other. They're going to be splitting games against each other, and it's not going to be conducive to them making the playoffs. Because playoff teams tend to beat teams that aren't in the playoffs, like without a doubt. They take care of business against teams that don't have winning records, which helps cement their winning record by the end of the year.
I mean, the Wizards said it, right? Or the Wizards, Bradley Beal said it, can't guard a parked car. The Wizards can't do anything right now. Bradley Beal is setting the world on fire.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to see. Bradley Beal is one of the best shooting guards in the league today, and he can't seem to get a win to save his life. And the Westbrook trade went through, everybody was saying, oh, the Wizards won this trade easily. And it's like, John Wall's been looking feisty out in Houston, he's got some speed and bounce to his game that we haven't seen in like 3 years.
Well, it's like here's the Wizards' like final scores. Like they beat the Timberwolves 130-109, so they still got 109 dropped on them. They sneak by the Nets 123-122. They lose to the Sixers 141-136, and then they lose to the Celtics 116-107, and then they lose to the Heat 128-124. Like they can't Bradley Beal's right. They can't guard a parked car. It's crazy.
That is insane. Like imagine just being a coach and you're sitting there. You're like, my team's averaging 120 points a game. We're 2-8. What do you want from me? Oh no.
Sorry.
Look off screen. You're all good, dude. There's a national title game going on. We apologize. We apologize for any oohs or ahs on Austin's part.
I watched a dude get blasted just now.
Yeah, you couldn't pay me enough to suit up in the NFL. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
Even college football, I would die. I've seen how hard these dudes hit. It's not for me. I was sitting there with Lindsay the other day. We were talking about, I was sitting there and I'm like, the types of injuries professional basketball players like accrue throughout their careers boggles my mind. So I don't think I'm ever going to be like making a pizza and blowing my ACL.
God, I hope not.
I'd have to be doing some stupid shit. But like playing basketball at the level they are and the amount of explosion and just torque they're putting their bodies through, they're blowing ligaments like it's nothing. Sitting here, I'm like,
it's like,
damn.
You literally just like go up for a ball and a rebound, accidentally fall out a dude's foot and your leg is facing the wrong direction.
Yeah,
that's it.
It's crazy, because the thing is, I also have to understand they're bigger, faster, and stronger than I am. So as high as I can jump and as fast as I can run, turn that up to 11, and that's them for 48 minutes just going as hard as they can.
Well, here's something like I like to think about sometimes is, and like for anyone listening, like please hit us up if like this happens to you. Every time I see like a freak injury, so like for example, I saw an MLB player tore his ACL when he was trying to take his like shoes off. So he does the old thing where you just like put one foot on the back of the other and like kick the shoe off. You know what I mean?
And he
tore his ACL doing that. Ever since then, I'm so careful about taking my shoes off that way. I do it all the time, but I like think about it every time I do it. I'm like, damn, my ACL could blow out right now.
I remember there was one time, there was a pitcher, and he stifled a sneeze. And I think he tore his oblique, or he strained it, and he was done for like 3 months.
That's what I'm saying.
And I was like, I'm just going to sneeze. I'm not going to hold that shit in. No way. It's a pass on my part.
Just imagine. But yeah,
out of the East, our biggest disappointments or surprises, definitely the Knicks at 6 and the Magic at 4, but the Nets at 10, I don't think that's really a surprise. They haven't had all of their guys going at 100%. The Nets could very well be a top 3 seed by the time playoffs roll around, especially the fact that they're like 2.5 games out of the 1 seed, and they haven't had Kyrie and KD for a combined like 4 games. So I'm not worried about them. Biggest surprise is the Toronto Raptors being number 13 in the standings. Yes, it's early, but man.
They don't look good at all.
They were like a top 4 seed last year. They won the title 2 years ago. And Gasol and Ibaka were difference makers. And I don't think they got enough credit when it was said and done. So it's also fair to assess that the Raptors were also no longer playing in Toronto for the season because of COVID. They're based out of Tampa Bay now. So I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think I would bet money for the Raptors to make the playoffs at this point. They don't look all that great. They're not winning games, and they have lost a ton of pieces. So they're going to have to do some internal facing evaluations of the team they have right now. Because Nick Nurse is a great coach. I saw the other day that they had a shot to beat the Warriors. Siakam hit him with one of those spin-around jumpers, and it just didn't hit pay dirt. So you win some, you lose some. But the Raptors need to start patching them together if they want to make the playoffs.
Well, so here's something that was interesting to me, since we haven't had an NBA show since our preview show. I want to talk about the third game of the season.
Okay.
After... after Serge Ibaka, apparently Kawhi Leonard owed him money or something. Like, he knocked, he elbowed Kawhi in the mouth. I don't know if Kawhi played a bad prank on him or he owed him money. I don't know what. But then the next game the Clippers play, they get absolutely, use whatever word you want, slammed, crushed, mollywopped. They were down, 70? I'm doing math here. 77-27 at halftime.
They were down by 50 at halftime to the Mavericks.
So
I forgot about that.
So is this the whole, like, you look back at the Spurs against the Warriors, and when Kawhi got hurt after that, it was a crush. Like, the Warriors just crushed the Spurs after that.
Yeah.
Games that Kawhi would miss for the Raptors would lose most of the time. So, like, does this Kawhi Leonard effect exist, or is it just like Paul George was off that day? Like, Paul George was really off that day. I think the whole team was off that day. But, like, what is this whole Kawhi Leonard effect that we consistently see for some reason? Like, I get it, Kawhi Leonard, I get it, he's a great player. But, yeah, like, there's other guys on the basketball court. And I get LeBron carried the Cavs to titles or title games. But, yeah, like, what, the Clippers shouldn't be the team that fall apart because one guy went down.
So, the thing with the Kawhi effect, quote-unquote, that series back in, I believe it was 2017, because it was the first year they had KD out there. He was taking it to him, rolled his ankle. That team wasn't built to have a second option step into the first option's place because Aldridge just isn't, he's not going to be able to put up what Kawhi can put up. They're different positions, they're different use cases, all that fun stuff. Most of the season, whenever the Raptors didn't have Kawhi 2 years ago, for the most part, they weren't terrible. I know Lowry helped carry them. I think they had a positive record whenever Kawhi was out that one season. But that's the difference between the Spurs and the Raptors. The Raptors' whole 2019-2020, whatever season that was, they were, yes, the 2019 NBA season. The Raptors that year, they were built off of ball movement and just team basketball, whereas Kawhi was their shot, the shot getter. Think of like Jimmy Butler on the Sixers that same year. It's two bounces go a different way. Jimmy Butler might still be in Philadelphia with a ring. That's how close those teams resembled each other, in my opinion, with the Raptors winning out on defense because they had the likes of Gasol, Ibaka, Lowry. They had bodies upon bodies. But with the Raptors at that point, you had Lowry who could get a bucket. You had Siakam who in transition could score with anybody. Van Vliet caught fire for the last 2 months of that postseason. Like, he had a baby and didn't miss for like 2 weeks. But yeah, with the Clippers, it's interesting because Ty Lue, he's a proponent of the LeBron James school of coaching, where most of his success came during years coaching LeBron James. And I don't know if Kawhi has that same overall impact on games, but I think his presence helps level everybody else on the court, especially players like Paul George. So whenever Paul George is on, he could be a top five MVP caliber player. But I think Kawhi helps the Clippers just kind of weather the storm in the tough times, because Kawhi Leonard can get a bucket anytime down the court. He's calculated. He has mid-range game. He can shoot threes. He can post up. He can drive. He's got the whole suite of offensive tools. And so whenever it slows down and you're stiffening up and the offense isn't running, you've got a guy like Kawhi who can just get you a bucket and get everybody back into a flow. And so whenever he's gone, especially for the Clippers, when they have their first and second units aren't bad. I think this Clippers team is worse than last year's Clippers team. I don't know. I just don't think they have the guy once he goes down. Like, Paul George is a first option on most teams. Yeah. But his personality type, I don't think fits the 1A role. Like, players like LeBron or KD and stuff like that.
Yeah, Paul George has always been interesting to me.
Yeah, I think Paul's more of a Kyrie than he is a KD, personally. And that's not comparing their games, it's comparing the mentalities. Because Kyrie could score 30 any night. Paul George can drop 40 any given night. But mentally, they're not always focused on strictly basketball, which isn't a problem at all. As a professional athlete, you can use your mind and your effort in any direction you wish, as long as you're performing on the court. And that's just the whole relationship of the social contract that they have with like ownership and their teams. Like as a fan, I can't complain about Kyrie Irving doing so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You are human beings, live your lives. But I think that's the thing with Paul George, is Paul George can get caught up with media and perceptions of who he is on the court. Like we saw it in the bubble last year. He fell apart.
Yeah, big
time. Internet destroyed that man. And with Kawhi, I don't see him letting stuff like that bother him.
I think Kawhi is like just in his own world and just kind of does whatever he wants. He's a very like chill kind of guy, and like, I don't know. You just kind of have the people who were like obviously LeBron James is going to get hate until the end of time. And he just goes out there and plays basketball. Like, yeah, he has a exorbitant media presence and, you know, does a lot of things for, you know, Cleveland and, you know, wherever he goes. But like, you just think about like LeBron James, and like, you can't replace LeBron James on those Cavs teams. You probably can't. I don't know any other player who could have done what LeBron did for those Cavs teams, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you take LeBron off of any team he's played on in the last 20 years or the last 17 years, that team is exponentially worse without him on that team. I think he's one of the only players in NBA history where you throw him on any team for any franchise and he gives you at least 5 to 7 wins on the year.
Mm-hmm.
And in some use cases, probably 20 to 30 wins. Like those early Cavs teams that he was dragging to the playoffs, like whenever he got drafted first overall, they were like a less than 20 win team.
Yeah.
And in his second year, they made the playoffs with like 45 wins.
Mm-hmm. And
even as recently as 2018, whenever LeBron tore his groin and he was out for the back half of the season, the Lakers fell apart. We were a playoff team going into that stretch, but after he tore his groin, it was done.
Well, and like the thing is with LeBron is just that, man, I had a really good point and I just completely lost it. Oh,
what was it centered on?
Okay. I remember. Sorry. I'm dumb. Cause basketball is one of those sports where you have the luxury of controlling both sides to a point, controlling both sides of the ball. LeBron gets to go down, play offense, and then gets to go to the other side and play defense. In most other sports, except for hockey, you don't get that. And even in hockey, you know, these guys who are scoring goals aren't really playing defense. That's why you have defensemen. But that's neither here nor there. LeBron James gets to control both sides of the ball. You have, like, the epic block that he had in Game 7 against the Warriors. Like, that's huge. Yeah, that block is freaking huge. Yeah. And, like, I get it. Kyrie put the dagger in that game with an insane three. But, like, it's still LeBron gets to have some say on both sides of the ball. And, like, that's kind of like the Kawhi effect. Or you look at a guy like Dame Lillard. Like, Dame Lillard isn't the greatest defense guy ever. But, like, he still gets to have a presence on both sides of the ball. And his presence on the offensive side is so huge, he's able to create some wins here and there.
Yeah, that's the fun part about basketball. And genuinely, in the seat that I take in the whole NBA spectrum, like because Draymond Green went on a tangent earlier in this week, just talking about like people or like sports pundits and like media and how they talk about basketball players. And genuinely, basketball is one of the most complex sports there is to fully understand, because whenever we're evaluating players, it's not just points, rebounds, assists, defensive win shares, stuff like that. There's so many different metrics in the NBA to judge a player upon. But, like, there's so many nuances in, like, play, because there's so many plays that go unrecognized, like screen setting, charges taken, help defense. I was in any argument whenever people talk about the greatest point guards of all time, Stephen Curry's name gets brought up quite a bit, and it's just because the thing with greatest players of all time, in my opinion, is there has to be ramifications based around their impact on the game. Because, yes, Damian Lillard is probably one of the best offensive point guards in the league today. Steph Curry's the best point guard in the league. It just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Steph is, he's never been an all-world defender, but he's always been a really good team defender, and he's changed the game of basketball. Well, not just because we're seeing a super high rate of three shot, the gravity that the man commands on the court is, it's never been seen before. Like, there was a picture that I saw on Twitter, and it was Ben Simmons, like, plays with Ben Simmons and how people sag off of him to the highest of extents. And you have Curry sitting behind the three-point line, and they're basically playing like a box and one to try and stop this dude. There's always someone in the vicinity of Steph Curry. He will never not have somebody attached to him or in his space.
Well, it's like, the thing is like, Curry is a guy you almost have to cover every single foot of a 94-foot court. This man will just walk to the center and be like, eh, fuck it, and just sink a three sometimes. And it's like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, this sounds really dumb, but like, I feel like the game of basketball changed like 10, 12 years ago when like a lot of teams, and then the Warriors team kind of just took it, was just like, wait a minute, three is more than two, so why don't we just get a bunch of threes and we'll outscore opponents 9 times out of 10. And then I'm not going to sit here and say Draymond Green, you know, is or isn't a product of his surroundings. Like, he played good enough defense for his team to get more threes and more points than the opponent. And they just got shooters and did it. And Draymond Green was the center of that defense, even though their defense wasn't completely there per se.
Well, those prime Warriors teams, Draymond Green, evaluating Draymond Green is tough, especially in this offensive centric era of the NBA.
Oh yeah.
He's never going to be a 20-10 guy, but at 14-6-7, he's probably the best at doing what he does, especially those prime Warriors years. Cause game 7, 2016, if the Cavs don't win that, Draymond's a legend, and he's still a legend in Golden State, but his mythos goes even higher. Cause he took over that game numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
I remember listening to it on the radio. Green's hitting, like, he had like 4 threes in the first half. But especially with a player like Draymond, he's not of his era in a sense. If he was a player in the 80s or the 90s, I think he's touted even more highly than he is now.
Oh, I think he's definitely in the wrong era, but he's still a great player by, you know.
Oh yeah.
By respect.
He's top 50 in the league easily.
Yeah.
He's never going to put up the stats of a guy like a Devin Booker or a Cat or an Embiid, because it's not his space to do that. But in terms of he's arguably one of the best basketball players in the court anytime he steps out there, because of his mind and how he understands the sport.
And even the thing is like, when if Klay Thompson's healthy this season, we probably don't talk about Draymond Green that much, because then you're going to talk about Steph lighting up the world like he is right now. You're talking about James Wiseman, who they, you know, had a high draft pick and took. They took Wiseman, right? I'm not crazy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they did.
And then you have Klay Thompson. And then you have two other guys on the court, and one of them being Draymond Green. Draymond Green's a great player, but he doesn't get a whole lot of talk because you have to talk about these other three.
And the fact that at 6'7", he ended up winning Defensive Player of the Year in a year where there was a prime Kawhi Leonard playing defense, Rudy Gobert was out there, Anthony Davis was playing. Draymond Green's accomplishments speak for themselves. His stats aren't what people should look at whenever it comes to his legacy as a player,
mm-hmm.
because I think stats are misleading. Stats require context. More often than not, there's plenty of players to average 20 points for a full season that genuinely weren't net positives to their teams.
I think definitely in the game of basketball, presence is a huge non-box score type stat.
Oh yeah, there's a reason why people consider Michael Jordan to be the greatest player of all time. It's not just the fact that he was outscoring dudes and winning titles. When Michael Jordan took the court, there was a different type of aura to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember stories from the 92 Olympics. I was watching the Dream Team documentary, and there was instances where literal grown men on Olympic teams for foreign nations were asking him for autographs before the game started. Or after the game starts, getting pictures with Michael. And yeah, it's whenever players reach this air of like fame and notoriety, it really transforms how the game's played at the same time. Because another big thing with the NBA today is, like, I think we have an issue with, like, actually addressing talent and appreciating talent. Because if you look at Steph Curry, he's a great basketball player, but he's shit on a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, former players and current players don't give him the credit he rightfully deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And so basketball is really just based, especially stats, are based upon context. You have to, in order to genuinely put player A and player B in the right scenarios to be evaluated against each other, you need to look at, so say, Wilt Chamberlain and Shaquille O'Neal, two of the most dominant players of all time. You need to adjust their stats to fit the eras, because there was way more possessions in the 1960s and 70s than we had in the 2000s. The game was played faster. There was different rules, stuff like that. And so unlike the NFL, which I guess we can even do that now with, like, how quarterbacks are protected, so passing yards are going to be a little more inflated.
Mm-hmm.
But the context is what comes into play the most.
Yeah, and one of the things that's, like, interesting, I really started to notice this. I can't remember what year, but
yeah,
LeBron James, as a Cavalier, hits a game-winning shot against the Bulls in the playoffs. Couldn't tell you what year. I just know that he sinks a game-winning shot, beats the Bulls. And the first thing my dad said was, how does that happen? How do you let LeBron James be the one to beat you? Because, you know, you look at the Cavs team and you're like, literally, I'd choose all four other guys to try and make that shot and finish the game. I think the same goes for, like, guys like Curry, guys like Lillard, and even AD in the most recent playoffs when he hit the buzzer beater against Denver, right?
Yeah, against the Nuggets.
It's like, there's two guys on the court that you shouldn't let beat you, and it's LeBron James and AD, and you let AD get the ball and beat you. Like, I think that's a huge thing of just, like, those guys, you draw so much. Like,
yeah.
I would never let Steph Curry touch a ball in the last 2 seconds of a game if he needs to make a game-winning shot. It's much easier said than done. But it's crazy.
That's the biggest thing about basketball, too. It's really chess, if you think about it. The way that these plays get drawn up and at the end of games is insane, especially with teams where you have multiple superstars. Like those Warriors teams with KD and Klay and Steph. Yeah, of course you don't want Kevin Durant pulling up from 30 to shoot the dagger. But at the same time, if you double team Kevin, that means Steph or Klay is going to be open.
Right.
And if you're lucky, Draymond's open, but he can still hit a shot.
Mm-hmm.
The league, where the league stands now is the best the NBA has ever been. I will qualify that statement by stating this is the most talented we've ever been in the NBA. Every single player in the league has definable skill.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know if this is a stat I can look up, but okay. I wouldn't doubt that in the 2010s through the 2020s, so the 2010 decade, I wouldn't doubt that was the most buzzer beaters in 10 years in history.
Yeah, there was a lot.
It just feels like every other night there's a buzzer beater, whether it's at the end of a game or not, whether it's at the half or at the end of the game.
End of a quarter. Yeah.
There's so many times where just one of these great guys will just shoot up and just be like, all right, cool, game over.
And it's not even like the great guys half the time. Shooting it before halftime starts. Taj Gibson threw a 75-foot just one-handed lob at a backboard two to four years ago, and it just went in, just the way the cookie crumbles. But the NBA, at least at this point, it's, I wouldn't say far more talented than the 80s or 90s or 70s, but just the level of athlete that you see as a baseline in the league is absolutely disgusting. I'm not saying Alex Caruso would go back in the 1970s and be an MVP, but yeah, the role player, if we had a baseline looking at role players from 1970 to present day, we would have a graph, and it would be on the constant incline. We are at the highest point of having just rotation guys and how good they are. But we got a little sidetracked. But speaking of getting sidetracked, the NBA season, a little bit so far with these two postponements, but something that hasn't gotten postponed is star players putting up star performances. So I'm looking at basketballreference.com currently at their 2020-2021 MVP ladder. And according to them, our top five rounds out with Jokic. So Nikola Jokic at one, Joel Embiid at two, LeBron at three, Malcolm Brogdon at four, and Domantas Sabonis at five. That list, I'm not surprised with the top three at all. The Lakers are the one seed in the West. The Sixers are the one seed in the East. And Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double. So it's early in the season, so Jokic might not average a full triple-double for the year. But their percentages as of like likelihood who's going to win the award, currently speaking, they see Jokic having a 37.6% probability of taking home the award. Because, to be fair, I think the Nuggets finish over 500, and I think they make the playoffs. So if they're a top four seed and Jokic is averaging a triple-double, the award's his.
And the thing is I already can probably tell you LeBron's not going to win because I don't think LeBron needs to play this whole season anyways.
Yeah.
For one. And if Denver continues to struggle at the point they are now, Jokic is going to have to continue to put up these performances and have to put up a dogfight to reach the top four, top three. So he has to have these numbers for the Nuggets to stand a chance. LeBron can take a night off and they could lose and they'll be fine. They'll still be the one or two seed, and then LeBron and AD come back and they win a game. Jokic has to put up these numbers. It's kind of the same thing with Russell Westbrook when he was putting up the numbers in OKC because he had to. Yeah. He didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. I was going to make that same comparison.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting to see three big guys rounding out the top five because it's a guard-dominated league for the most part, or small forward-dominated league with our MVPs of the last 5 years. Well, even like last decade, the last big guy to win the MVP. Let's draw this back a bit. So the last center or power forward to win the NBA MVP. 2010, who won the award? Okay, because 08 was KG, I think. Yeah, 08 was KG, 2009 was Kobe, 2010, that's LeBron, 11. Okay, yeah. So 08 was Kobe, 09's LeBron, 10 is LeBron, 11's Derrick Rose, 12 went to LeBron, 13 went to LeBron,
mm-hmm. 14 went to Durant.
Durant, and then 15 was Steph, 16 Steph, 17 Harden.
Westbrook,
then Harden, then Giannis.
Yep.
So the last time a big guy won the MVP was Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah.
Right?
The last power forward.
That's almost...
Well, I guess Giannis is a power forward. Beyond Giannis, it'd be Dirk Nowitzki. And then, like in the early 2000s, you have Duncan and Garnett winning it.
Garnett and Shaq, yeah. Yeah, because with the current NBA structure, I don't consider Giannis the big guy. Like, yeah, he's a huge dude, but he plays the game more like a guard than a center.
He is a big man, but he's not a big man in the NBA.
Traditionally speaking, in the NBA.
Yes.
Jokic barely plays like a center, but Jokic plays more like a center than Giannis does. So with Sabonis, Embiid, and Jokic in the top five right now, it's refreshing to see because the last decade plus has been dominated by these quicker guard-like players winning the award. Do I think it's going to end up with Jokic or Embiid or Sabonis winning the award? I don't think Sabonis will win the award, especially with Brogdon sitting right there in the ranking.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to eat each other alive for votes. Giannis is number six, and we're sitting at seven with Anthony Davis. Middleton's at eight. I don't expect him to move up. Vucevic at nine. Don't expect him to move up. Jaylen Brown at number 10. Jaylen Brown's been insane this year.
Yeah.
He's putting up, let's look at points. He's average. 26.3 on the year per game. That's really good.
Yeah, honestly.
And then,
I'm sure he can move deeper into the top 10 once he passes some of these guys who are going to rest for sure.
Oh, yeah. I don't get how they have Middleton ranked over Jaylen Brown. That's crazy. That's, yeah, I don't know about Middleton and Vucevic being over Jaylen Brown. Their top five is solid, but only player averaging more points currently is Giannis, 27.1. And Jaylen Brown's on the best team in basketball, at least in the East, comparatively. Like, yes, the Sixers have the same record, but I don't know. I think the MVP will be interesting this year. It's going to be a shortened season. We're going to see some different things happening. So whoever ends up winning it, it won't be Giannis. It just won't. He's won it back-to-back years. Or did he just three-peat with his last one?
No, it was the last two.
So he's gone back-to-back. The thing with the NBA MVP is there's a lot of voter fatigue. If you're in that limelight, you're in the running year after year after year after year, you just don't get the edge. They give it to somebody else that hasn't gotten it yet.
Look at
LeBron. LeBron could have been MVP for the last 5 years.
Well, yeah, I think that perfect example, LeBron, and in just all sports in general, when you look at the MVP, if let's go to like baseball. Let's go to Mike Trout. Mike Trout's the greatest player on the planet. But mm-hmm. Mike Trout has to better his MVP season the year before. He could put up the same exact numbers, but then you start looking at other people. So like when LeBron doesn't do better than a previous MVP season, then it's like, okay, well, that's just LeBron being LeBron. Somebody else did better. Here we go. So like Giannis, his second time did better than his first, but now he has to do better than those previous two seasons. And I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. That I think the one MVP season where I was looking at somebody trying to repeat and I sat there and I said, yeah, this makes more sense. Steph Curry, his second year, his back-to-back MVPs. 2016 Curry was a demigod on the court.
Oh, yeah.
He upped his scoring average by like 6 or 7. He had like more assists, more rebounds, hit the most threes in NBA history for a season. It was simple. But Giannis would have to do something short of like shooting 40% from three, averaging 32 points a game with like 12 rebounds and 8 assists.
Yeah.
While leading them to the first seed.
Yeah, like literally, Curry was like, all right, cool. I had a great year last year. Now I'm just going to set records and win again.
Exactly. So at the current point, I think best odds for myself to pick an MVP winner, I think Jokic has a shot, especially with how valuable he is to his team.
Yeah.
Embiid should be up there. I think Davis should move up quite a bit. I think Anthony Davis was my pick going into the year for the MVP, so he should finish top three. And depending on what LeBron's numbers are, if it's close and the Lakers have the one seed and LeBron's putting up his 24-8-8, I think the award could go to him, especially because he's older. Like, there's been plenty of years where LeBron kind of got shafted out of winning it. Like, last year, in my opinion. Like, yes, Giannis had a great year, but I think LeBron's was better. Granted, I'm a Laker fan, so there might be some implicit bias baked into that take. But the way I saw it, if Giannis got Defensive Player of the Year, LeBron gets MVP. If Giannis gets MVP, Davis gets Defensive Player of the Year. Because,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, Giannis is great, but I don't know. His impact is definitely felt for the Bucks, but I don't think it's as valuable as what LeBron or AD brought to their teams last year.
I think Embiid is in a really good spot because he's, you know, the Sixers are at 7-3. So if they, you know, if they can continue to win and not have to dogfight, granted they are in the East, so the East is always a bit easier, but let's,
yeah,
I mean, the East is getting better. But I think it's basically going to be between Embiid and Jokic. If Denver continues to struggle, can continue to play 500 basketball, then I think Jokic should be the front runner. Granted that he continue this run that he, it's basically who's forced up to put the numbers. I completely said that sentence bad.
Forced to put up the numbers?
If Jokic or Embiid are forced up to put the numbers up, I'm just having a bad time. Yeah.
It's all right. It's a Monday.
It really is. But whoever is forced to put up numbers, there we go, will just be that front runner. It's basically what is their supporting cast going to do for them? Is Denver going to continue to play 500? Is you know, the Sixers going to continue to play 700 type basketball. It's just like, who's going to play the better basketball, honestly? Who's supporting cast is going to help them win more games?
Yeah. And it's early in the season. This show is going to be speculative from the point of recording to the point that it hits your ears. There's not much we can actually debate about the NBA season at this point. There's been enough games for us to look at some people slumping, some people resting, and some people just not fully being there to start the year, or players that are coming out super hot, which leads me to the surprises category of the show. So biggest surprises to start the year off. Jaylen Brown, for me. Jaylen Brown came into the season, and he has been a top option for the Celtics, and on a team where everyone's been talking about Jason Tatum, and he's only 20 for the past 5 years. Like, that was one of my favorite basketball memes of the last decade. He's only 20. I'm sure he's like 22 at this point, 23. But Jason Tatum has been basically crowned the Celtics. He's basically the Celtics' crown jewel. But Jaylen Brown is putting up numbers where he's the guy.
Yeah.
I liked him when they drafted him, but he's really proving to the NBA world that this guy is someone that we should take seriously as a max level talent. Well, and the Celtics re-signed him for almost a steal.
Well, and Tatum's out for 2 weeks. Isn't Tatum out for 2 weeks because of COVID?
COVID. Yeah. And that's part of the reason. Well, half of the roster's out for like 2 weeks.
Fair.
Because of contact tracing.
Yeah.
But Jaylen Brown has been a very welcome surprise for me as a basketball fan. I think he plays the game well. He shoots well from mid-range. He attacks. He's just a smart player. Another surprise for me, after I heard the Klay Thompson news for the Warriors, I was actually like selling stock on the Warriors as fast as I could, because Klay Thompson's their best perimeter defender, and he's the second best shooter in basketball history to a certain extent. And Steph Curry's been Steph Curry. He was out a huge chunk last year, but he is officially back. He dropped 64 on the Trailblazers. After Dame said something about, well, it's not as easy now for him to get those buckets because everybody else is 62. Out. 62,
yeah.
He dropped 62 for a career high. And, man, is that guy exciting to watch. He's the only player in the game where anytime he touches the ball, I think he's good for at least 2 to 3 points.
Honestly, yeah, like, he proved to us that we can't count him out. You can't.
Yeah.
Even without Klay.
His game is... Yeah, he's just, his game is built to just withstand. Even if he loses some of his athleticism in the future, I still think he's good for 20 points a game. He shoots, and shooting ages like a fine wine.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't have to get in there and get beat up. He literally just fires from the arc and heads the other way.
Yeah, comes off screens, pops a three, bucket, bucket, bucket. Julius Randle is another surprise for me so far this season. He's a good player. I've never disliked Julius Randle. I watched him break his leg his first game as a Laker. Love to see it. Just kidding. I felt terrible. Still do. That was the worst news coming into that season for the Lakers. I was watching the game. I was watching ESPN, SportsCenter, whatever it was. And they're like, Julius Randle done for the year, broken fibula. And I'm like, you mean our number 9 overall pick from this year's draft? Cool. But yeah, Julius Randle's been on a tear for the Knicks, and they're now coached by Thibodeau. And from everything that I'm hearing, they're really enjoying him as their head coach. And they're playing good basketball. The East isn't some murderer's row at this point. There's a lot of teams that are either good or kind of suspect. So if Julius Randle's putting up these numbers and they can squeak out the wins against the teams they need to beat, they could realistically be a 7-8 seed.
Yeah, they lost to Charlotte tonight, kind of convincingly. But, I mean, they've always been kind of like that poverty type of team that's just like, you know, the Cleveland Browns of the NBA. So, you know, to start off the first 11 games, 5-6, ain't the worst start in Knicks history.
Yeah, I'm also surprised by the Nuggets' overall record, but the Nuggets will be fine. I think Jokic has been the best thing to happen to them in the last decade. And I think Jokic this year is going to be playing the best basketball of his career. He's he's like the most unassuming NBA superstar I've ever seen. He's quiet. He's not loud. He doesn't talk to the media too much. He's slow, looks unathletic, but he just puts the ball in the basket and wins games.
Yeah, the West is going to be a dogfight.
I'm not looking forward to whoever the Lakers have to play in the playoffs because, shoot, it's just, it's dense.
It really is. It's like, I like the look of Denver, don't get me wrong, but like, the Spurs time is over. Wouldn't surprise me if the Spurs were out of the top eight by the end of the season.
Oh, they should be. I don't know. DeMar DeRozan's shooting threes, but that's only going to take them so far. Greg Popovich is one of the best coaches ever, but their talent just doesn't match up with the top ends of the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's just about like time for them to be over. But I mean, you have both LA teams who are always going to be in the mix. If Phoenix continues to play well, if Utah continues to play well, Curry setting the world on fire, Dallas, you know, Dame can always get the Trailblazers to the first round, at least it looks like so far.
Oh yeah.
And it looks like I'm just going to kick OKC out of that eight seed and just say I'm not going to say Denver's going to finish eight, but like, let's kick OKC out and put Denver in there. That's a stacked eight.
Yeah.
That's a dogfight of playoffs.
Yeah. That's one through eight. You're not looking forward to playing any of them. And especially with the Mavericks right now, because Luka came out slow this year. Luka Doncic was not at his level that he left us with last year. But he's starting to get better and better. He didn't come into the season in the best shape. So as time's progressing, Luka's getting back into the flow. And now, as recently as today, the Mavericks are going to be bringing back KP. So Porzingis will be playing for the Mavericks, and that's going to be a huge addition.
Wait, what?
Kristaps Porzingis, he hasn't played a game this year. He's back starting tonight, I think.
For the Knicks.
The Mavericks. Yes, the Mavs. Porzingis is coming back for them soon. Because Doncic has been doing his best carry job of them so far. But it'll definitely be helpful to have Porzingis out there.
Why did I think Porzingis was a Knick? Am I crazy?
He was for a while, and they traded him. They didn't want to pay the dude, you know, for his services.
All right, I just had a brain fart,
York,
I guess.
You have the biggest media market in the world. You can't afford to pay star athletes, you know. That's the problem with the salary cap, too. Salary cap's really, you know, just get in the way of stuff. But the season's still early. We'll be coming back to you guys with more NBA news as the season goes along. But genuinely, there hasn't been a whole bunch going on besides box scores and now game postponements.
I think I'm always going to feel bad for Trae Young, though. I feel like Trae Young's having a good time out in Atlanta. Yeah. But Atlanta's not having a good time winning games.
The Atlanta Hawks are like the ultimate league pass team this year to begin with. The Kings and the Hawks. If I was paying for league pass, I would watch Hawks games and Kings games because they're young, they're dynamic, they can shoot, and John Collins can dunk the ball from anywhere. But yeah, Trae, they need to play defense. If the Hawks can learn how to play defense, they can make the playoffs. Until they learn how to play defense, they'll be picking in the lottery.
Yeah,
but
like,
I think that's about it from me.
They beat up the Sixers tonight, but that's about it. They have like those flashes.
Yeah. The Sixers have like seven dudes in the roster they can actually play.
I think Doc Rivers might have taken a few shots.
Yeah, Doc Rivers suited up for the first time in 20 years. Yeah, but so I think we're basically done with the NBA show for this go around.
Yeah, I mean, we're about 10,
not
11,
much else to cover.
Yeah, 10, 11 games in the season. Still a lot of speculation, but you know, you kind of expect slow starts after a 70, 80 game or 80 day off season. So you might get those slow starts.
Well, as the season progresses, we're going to be coming out with more of our NBA shows, and who knows, maybe we'll get some trades or some free agent signings. Somehow someone's just waiting to be signed. I know Larry Sanders is always a hot commodity for a team that has a center go down. So if there's any news like that, we'll definitely be able to cover it moving forward.
Or whenever James Harden gets traded.
Exactly, yeah. Whenever there's big news to be brought about for the NBA. But as of right now, We've had some surprises with teams falling in standings and teams rising in standings, but it's been 12 games, so we got to kind of let the averages actually play out. So the small sample size isn't really indicative of a lot of the team's talents. So as time progresses, we'll be able to evaluate more and get a clearer picture of how things are going to play out. But so far, it's been entertaining, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely has been. It I always look forward to like those fast starts, whether they're, you know, real or not.
Yeah, 100%. But as always, we plan on coming back to you guys Tuesday morning to record for our NFL and MLB review of the week, right?
Yep, and NFL playoffs, MLB trades. If anything happens between now and tomorrow morning, we'll let you know basketball-wise.
Just breaking news. San Diego Padres trade for Nolan Arenado and the entire Midwest. And it's like, what? Where are they moving? It's like they have this guy in the they have a guy in the minors. His name's like Tim. He's 12 and he has a cannon. It's like, what?
San Diego Padres have made moves to acquire James Harden as their first baseman.
Dude, it's freaking crazy. But yeah, as always, looking forward to whenever that's going to be coming out. But we appreciate you guys for listening. We can't wait till the NBA season keeps going and the stove gets hotter, per se.
Always.
Oh, yeah. We love a hot stove on this show. But well, whenever the news breaks, we'll be coming at you with it. So, as always, I'm Devin.
And I'm Austin.
And peace.